Do you sometimes wonder just how profitable could your business be? It's a common question that plagues many entrepreneurs, and it can be overwhelming to figure out the real profit potential of a business with all the different benchmarks and advice out there. Plus, you're putting in the hours and making the sales, but at the end of the day, maybe the profit just doesn't seem to match the effort. It can be really frustrating. You see the potential, but unlocking it, making it real, can feel just out of reach. That's where Reza Huda comes in. He turned his own accountancy practice from nearly closing down to making over $1 million. And he did that while working less than 10 hours per week. Now, beyond his own turnaround, Reza has created the Profitable Accountants Community and Mastermind, aiming to help accountancy practices find their path to greater profits. Today, Reza is here to simplify the financials and show us what drives true profit. So if you're wondering how much profit your business should be making, then Reza has the experience and the answers to help guide you. Welcome to De-Stress Your Business, the podcast where we show you how to get incredible results in your business without constant stress. I'm Alexis Kingsbury, a serial entrepreneur and founder at Air Manual, and I'm joined by Reza Huda. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Alexis, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
It's so glad that we could get this in the diary. It's such an important topic. You know, when we talk about, you know, revenue being vanity and profit is sanity and cash is king and all that kind of stuff, ultimately, we're talking about perhaps one of the most important concepts when it comes to building your business is making sure that you're actually generating profit, both in the short term and long term and so on. So I'm really excited to dive into that, given your significant expertise in this area. So let's start with, like, what was perhaps a pivotal realization for you that transformed your accounting practice into a significant success? And, you know, what did it take for you to create that transformation?
Sure. Okay. So this probably goes back to a few years into starting my practice. After starting my practice, I kind of did the things that I inherited from working in a big four accountancy firm coming from PwC. I thought that was the way to do things. So I charged by the hour and I kept timesheets and I micromanaged my team and I undercut to win work and all the things that you shouldn't know I was doing because I didn't know any better. And it wasn't until I came across a mentor back in 2014 when, you know, we were in dire straits. You know, it was tough to keep the business afloat. It was tight making payroll and VAT payments. You know, we needed to run out of business. One client would come in, two would leave. We had high staff turnover. Things weren't great. Then I met a mentor and I had an epiphany moment when I attended this one webinar and I joined a mentoring program that actually I was doing it wrong all this time. And the first place to start really was on my pricing. You know, I was charging by the hour, which was a completely wrong way to price. And I was undercutting to win work. And that was a realization that, and there was one line that has stuck with me ever since, which I heard, you know, 10 plus years ago. And that is that pricing is the most powerful lever in the profit equation, right? And if we really understood that, that there's only three ways to grow a business, right? You either get more customers in, you sell more to your existing customers, or you get them to buy more often. And the quickest way to make more profit in your business is to change your pricing, is to increase your prices. Because what happens there is that profit flows straight through to your bottom line without you doing any more work. But it's something that's so often overlooked that in the quest to grow our businesses, to make more money, the automatic reaction is just, I need more clients. I need more clients. I need more customers. And we're just piling more customers without actually realizing or looking at our pricing to think, well, actually, if we're not making money at this level, if we bring in more customers, we've got additional cost and capacity to deal with that. We then got issues of, you know, if not delivering the right quality of service and all the rest of it, which will then impact the attitude and the perception of our customers and potentially make them leave. So focusing on profit, especially for an accounting firm, is the first place that I would recommend and start for anyone that's kind of already on that journey to make sure that they are pricing correctly, pricing based upon the value they deliver, based upon the results they get for clients, the outcomes and the solutions, not based upon their costs or how much, you know, what their hourly rate is, because that's got nothing to do with what the client values. So that's kind of in a nutshell the intro in terms of where I would start, but happy to then now take questions further and let's develop the conversation from there.
Yeah, I think it's nice. And I think it reminds me of an episode we did, I think it was with Aaron Bhattacharya, where we talked about the power of pricing and having that mindset around how are you making sure that both your pricing matches your customer and what a huge lever it can be in terms of generating increased revenue and so on. I guess one of the challenges, particularly actually when we take like an accountancy business, is the ease with which some of those prices can be compared. And the risk is that it becomes quite a almost commoditized market, right? It's like, oh, well, I need my VAT return doing. How much as the business owner do you care about, you know, all the bells and whistles? Or do you just go, yeah, I just need it doing on time? And I suppose that's an area which can often result in sort of downward pressure on those prices and so on. So before I kind of dive into some of the other aspects of profitability, I'm interested in your view in that market particularly, and there are many other industries where there's some sort of similar dynamic there where, you know, people know can get the information on price per hour of their bookkeeper or accountant or likely cost per VAT return, whatever. What's been your approach and the approach of your clients that's kind of bucked that trend and made that work really well?
Yeah, that's a great question. And unfortunately, this is one of the big myths that exist professionally, particularly in professional services, that we sell time. We don't sell time. We sell a result, an outcome or solution. But just because we find it so difficult to find an alternative, then because of the risk-averse nature of most people in professional services, the solicitors and the accountants, that they resort to this, you know, accepted price per hour because they think that actually, okay, if I get an amount per hour, then it's going to cover my costs and leave me some for profit. But it doesn't even do that, because what ends up happening is that accountants keep timesheets. So when it comes to actually billing a client, and the lawyers do this as well, is that you look at what's on the ledger, the number of hours, and then you make a judgment. Will the client pay this amount or not? And more often than not, you write off an amount and then you send them a bill for a lower amount because you don't think they're going to pay what's on the ledger. Or you look at it and say, actually, I can get a bit more. So you increase the amount and you send them a bill for a higher amount. So we're making stuff up as we go along the way. So what is the point? What's the point of keeping them anyway? Why not just get an agreement from the client at the outset in terms of this is what I'm going to do and this is how much it is, and get them to agree to the amount before you even start the work? Better for you, it's better for the client. Because when you sell time, really, there's no benefit for you to be able to work smarter. There's no efficiency. The client loses out if you are slow or inefficient. It's a really bad way to price for you and for your client. You know, where do I put that harebrained idea I get in the shower to save a client £1 million, you know, that I get in 5 minutes? Where does that go on the timesheet? It's hugely valuable for the client. So, you know, time is not what we sell. We need to move away from that. And the first chapter of my book is just dedicated to banishing the myths around pricing and getting rid of this notion that we sell time, because we don't. Clients, as lovely as you may be, don't spend money to spend time with you. They don't want time from you. They want an outcome. They want a result. They want some kind of solution. That's what they want. So actually thinking, changing our mindsets and thinking about what does the client want? What result am I helping them achieve? And then pricing based upon that. Now, yes, you know, how do you come up with that? And yes, it's not easy, but it's about thinking what is the value and starting off with some kind of, and realizing that part of the value that we deliver is not always when we are doing the work. So often people in professional services, they have this mindset when they're selling time that I am only useful to my clients when I'm physically banging the keys on my keyboard to write a document or to prepare a set of accounts. When I'm not physically staring at a screen and banging letters into a keyboard, I'm not valuable to the client. But that is not the case. One of the biggest ways that we add value to our clients is the peace of mind we offer and the access that they have to us when they have a problem. That access is huge. The ability to be able to call upon a professional when I have a question, when I have a problem, and get an answer there and then without having to spend hours and hours on Google or ChatGPT or wherever to get an answer that I don't know whether it's correct or not. And then if I rely on that, the risk is huge for me to rely on stuff that I found online, and the implications of that is massive. So actually the value of just being there when somebody needs you. You could be sleeping, you could be on the golf course, but the fact that I know I can call you when I need you, that is value. And so the starting point is that in professional services, we need to think in a subscription type mentality that we are delivering value all the time, even when our clients are not calling us or not getting a set of deliverables from us on a piece of paper. And we need to build that into our pricing model. So the way of doing that is if you have something recurring on a subscription type basis, which allows the client that's paying you on a monthly basis the access to you, that is value.
I love that. And I think particularly because, like, from my perspective, essentially as a customer of accountancy businesses, what you say is spot on, right? Like, as a customer of accountancy businesses, I don't like it when I'm told, oh, well, this is complex, so we'll just do it per hour and so on. Partly because I don't know what I've got a budget for, and therefore that makes it hard to even make a decision on whether this is the right route to go. Like, I've had it before over complex VAT arrangements with trading in multiple countries, and it's like, oh well, we can go and do a, you know, an invest, you know, we can go and do a sort of research piece or whatever, and you're not even able to make a decision over whether this is going to be worth the effort to continue, you know, whether actually would it be easier if we just don't train those countries, just take the complexity away. And so I don't like it for that. I also don't like the fact that I'm expecting that person as an expert in this area to have a pretty good idea of what's involved with achieving a particular objective. And so I want them to be able to tell me, like, it's going to cost this, even if they have to include a little bit of contingency to make sure that they're really confident of that so that I have some certainty. I think also, exactly as you say, there's so many things that I value from professionals beyond the time that they spend, as you say, the peace of mind and so on. And so, and I am happy to pay for that. And it sort of reminds me as well, like, one of my businesses is a consulting practice. And very early on, from my own experience as a consultant, I made the decision of, we're not pricing per hour, we're doing it on per project and so on. And there's been numerous cases over the history of that business, which is now 14 years old, where there's been a challenge to that model, either from the client saying, like, oh, well, you know, for this thing, can we just do a rate card? You know, can you just do as a day rate? Or from team members, consultants who have said, oh, well, it feels like in this situation, maybe we should do a day rate. And I've always said, no, we're just, if that's the case, we're just not clear enough on what the goal is and what the outcome is, which is not in the client's interest either. And so we've got really specific. And you're exactly right in terms of it incentivizes the right behaviors, because it means that we'll be looking to sharpen the saw. We'll be looking to make sure that if we can get them the result in half the time, fantastic. They want that. We want that. And we're all getting paid. Whereas if I'm charging per day, if my consultants are charging per day, you know, it's in our interest to take longer over, which it feels at odds with the client. So I do love that as a model. And I can see the benefit of pricing, as you say, like a subscription on the basis of an ongoing value. What I want to do now is perhaps dive into the numbers, because as a business grows, you know, and we'll use accountancy practices as that's an example. That's an area where you've got the most experience, you know, you've built your own, in fact, multiple ones, and even one as a test during COVID, which we'll perhaps loop round to that. But also you've worked with them through your mastermind, so you have a lot of insight into this area. So I'd love to, using accountancy practices as an example, explore what happens to its profit as it grows. Typically, they have a reasonably predictable path. It normally starts with one or two practice owners that, you know, whether it's a husband and wife or a couple of friends previous ex-colleagues who have left a larger firm, they start out together. Typically, in that first year, what does their business look like in terms of the numbers and the metrics?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, in this case, clearly, it would vary substantially. But I guess most people, when they start their practice, they're just looking to replace their salaried income. So they've been working either in practice or industry a while. They're kind of fed up of the 9-to-5, the rules, and they want that freedom. And so they decide to set up on their own, just wanting to replace their current salary with income from their business. And so they start to take clients from their existing network, and that then evolves into, you know, from referrals into something a bit more substantial. Then they get to a point where they can't do the work themselves, there's too much, and they start to recruit to be able to then, you know, palm off some of the work so they can then have the capacity to bring on more work.
And if we pause there, so yeah. broadly, what would you be estimating, like at the point that they're starting to have to bring in other team members, what's that looking like as for that particular business, perhaps in terms of number of clients, approximate revenue, and so on, before we then kind of dive into how they're then going to start spending their money?
Yeah, so typically, I mean, most practice owners that I see, because they start up with the notion that, oh, I can start on my own and therefore I don't have big overheads and therefore I can undercut to win work and I can charge much less than existing accountants. They end up actually doing themselves a disservice and undercutting to win work, and they take on anyone and everyone without any clarity as to any particular type of business they want to go after, or any particular ideal client avatar, because they just want business. Yep. And so the average fees won't be great. So the averages are probably less than £1,000. Yep. So they'll probably get to a point where they're at £50,000-£60,000 of revenue with, you know, like 50 odd clients, which then becomes unmanageable, and they have to now recruit to be able to then get somebody else in to share the workload with. Now, actually, when I mentor accountants at that level, the reason why I did this marketing test, so just to give you a very kind of quick intro in the marketing test, is that my audience was telling me, look, how do we win new business? It was the number one challenge that I kept hearing from accountants: how do we win new business? How do we grow? And I'd run a course before in terms of showing them how I'd done it in my first accounting firm, how we built a property tax niche and how we developed that and then became known as the nationwide experts with that. But I thought the second time that I was running it, rather than just teach you, I said, I'll do it with you. I will set up a brand new accounting firm, new name, new logo, new website, and everything that I do, I will share with you in real time. And the promise of the course was 0 to 100K in 12 months. If we didn't get there, it would have been serious egg on my face. Thankfully, we got there in 9. But we got there with a handful of clients. So to get to the 100K, we had about 8 clients in total. So that's a near kind of £10,000 average fee from a brand new accounting firm with no previous record history in the marketplace at all. And the reason why that was possible is that we got really clear, crystal clear on our audience, on our target audience. And then we priced based upon the value. So this, it was called Capture Accounting. The audience, the niche was content creators and influencers. And we targeted them directly. And when they came to us, we priced based upon value. So we weren't afraid of going in with high kind of, you know, high 4-digit, 5-digit recurring fees for the service that we were providing, because a huge value add for them in terms of managing their whole finance function, managing everything to do with their tax and compliance work. So they don't have to worry. They can focus on growing their business and we'll take care of everything else. And that grew rapidly within 9 months. But the real purpose and kind of moral of the story of that course was that you don't need to have been in business for 20 years to win 20K fees. You don't need to have umpteen years of experience to be able to charge those kind of fees. You don't need to have offices up and down the country and a massive team in order to be able to earn those kind of fees and generate that kind of revenue. So give them that kind of belief that if you really focus your efforts and position your firm as a specialist in one particular area, then you will attract better quality clients paying you higher fees, which will enable you to grow your practice much faster than taking on anyone and everyone from the taxi drivers to the construction industry to doctors and dentists that you know, which is only going to affect your margins, because you get to a point where when you start hiring, you're dealing with so many different industries, meaning that it takes more resource to be able to manage the workload of lots of different clients and lots of different industries. Because your team now have, one day they're dealing with questions around superannuation for doctors and dentists. The next they're looking into CIS for the construction industry. The next they're looking into buy-to-let issues for property investors. And they're having to research and look into things and figure out how to do the bookkeeping and accounts for so many different industries that it becomes a very inefficient operation. Whereas when you're dealing with just one or two niches, you get to know that sector inside out. You know at the top of your tongue, you know, tip of your tongue, all the answers to the questions that are going to be thrown at you because you've heard it all before. You know exactly how to set up the booking in the right way. You know where the income is going to come in from. You know the jargon. You can set up systems, become a lot more efficient in dealing with the same type of client And you're charging them more at the same time because you're the specialist. So then what happens? You can charge more because you're the specialist. You don't have to have as many people, as much resource to be able to deliver the work for those handful of clients that you have. And therefore, that big gap in the middle is your healthy profit at the end of it.
Love that. I think that's something that has kind of been picked up in a few episodes on De-Stress Your Business sort of over the last few months, is this concept of this, you know, being really clear on your ideal customer. And I think the way that you crystallize that there is so powerful, and something that, you know, for me has been something that I've kind of been on a bit of a discovery on. That it's an area that I've historically not been great at, is doing that focusing, partly because of my consulting background. I'm, you know, I see lots of businesses and go, actually, I see the similarities as much as I see the differences. Whereas I completely agree with that. And I think your point around it's got this kind of weird mix of both. It reduces your costs because your team are answering the same questions regularly rather than lots of variety, but also weirdly it means that your team are also more experienced and can add more value, because not only are they able to answer those questions quickly, but also they might be able to answer questions that you hadn't even thought of because they've had the experience of working with other businesses that are similar to yours. And I think, you know, Reza, that for on the Air Manual side, like, we've been working on specific segments that if one of my businesses, and one of them is like accounting and bookkeeping practices. And that's been mind blowing for me. It's like, as you say, the fact that we now know exactly what are the various tool tech stacks that they use and the problems that they face. And it does change things in a way that I hadn't fully appreciated before. And I think, as you say, it creates room. It creates room for this profit that otherwise wouldn't exist. So using that as the foundation then, starting with that first 50,000 of revenue, maybe it's even up to 100,000 revenue if you've maybe got a couple of partners in this business, that it's largely they've been doing everything, the sales and the delivery to get to that point. They're now starting to creak and need to bring in other team members. They've hopefully focused on the right target audience, so there's actually room and that there's profit so they can bring people in. What's kind of the next milestone? What are they needing to spend money on? How much are they having to give up? Because in my experience, it's almost like up to this point, hypothetically, let's say it's two business partners, 100K in revenue, 50K each. Largely, it all goes to profit. Obviously, there's going to be some software costs and so on, but largely it all comes to profit. So they're quite happy. They're going, oh, well, brilliant. This, I'm earning about what I was earning before, 50K, but I've got more freedom and can play golf and so on. And then suddenly they're going to have to bring someone in, but often they're not able to do it quite marginally. They're going to have to bring someone in on a fairly decent amount and suddenly accept a reduction in their profit and income. What does that look like in your experience? How does someone kind of cross that chasm into starting to bring team members in without, you know, essentially causing problems at home when they're suddenly not making any money?
Yeah, so I guess once they've traversed the 100K and maybe brought in a junior to help, I mean, now we've got a global village. We've got this talent across the world that we can tap into. And outsourcing and offshoring is a lot more commonplace in the accounting profession than it was 10, 15 years ago. It's a lot more accepted practice. A lot more firms are doing it. And actually, if you're not doing it, you're probably going to be left behind, because there is this, you know, there is, I mean, after how do we get new clients, the second most common challenge I hear is finding good people. Finding good people in the UK is hard work, you know, in terms of talent, to recruiting top talent. Whereas there is this global village, you know, in Indo-Pac, in the Philippines, of highly qualified individuals who follow the UK system, ACCA, in India, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, the Philippines are great at bookkeeping. And there are these avenues now we can tap into, which means that we can grow and scale a lot faster if we're savvy about it. So what I would say is, what I recommend is that getting beyond the 100K to get to that next milestone, to say 250K and then 500K beyond that, is that the first hires you need to make is get experienced people in, because we don't have the luxury of the big firms when it comes to, you know, they will have a huge recruitment round and get 100 graduates in 1 year, knowing that 80% of them will leave after 3 years and they'll retain 20. But they can do that because they're big firms. We can't do that. At the small firm level, you can't do that. You can't afford to have such high turnover every 2 or 3 years. So my recommendation is that you actually get experienced client managers in who can effectively take over your work. Because the sooner you can get out of the technical work, the more time that you have of doing what you do best in terms of leveraging your skills to grow the practice. As a business owner, you should not be spending time doing accounts and doing tax returns. The quicker you can get out of that, the better, because there are people who can do that at a much, much lower hourly rate, notional hourly rate than you can, either in using an outsourcing facility or getting another team member in to do that. Your role is at that level, build the systems so your team can follow those systems, because there is this concern that, yeah, when you've grown the practice, no one can do it as well as you can, but you'll never grow with that mindset. You've got to adopt the mindset that, yes, to get out of this technician mode and move into entrepreneur mode, you need to build the systems to ensure that you can bring in a team that will run those systems, that will generate the level of output in the same way that you would, to the same quality, give or take. And someone can do it 80% as well as you, that is fine. Allow it to happen. You know, over time, they will click close to 100%. It doesn't have to be 100% for you to hand it over. So that's really important, to get experienced people in, because getting experienced people in will mean that A, it doesn't involve so much of your time training them to get to where they need to be. B, you can hand over those client relationships a lot faster. And then C, they can then, as you grow further, when you bring in more junior members to support them, they're the ones training them. They're the one coaching them, not taking up your time. So it allows you to then now start building these pods, building these teams of client managers who will be supported by a couple of junior members underneath them, or with, you know, our offshore staff in the Philippines, for example. You know, we have a few in our team, and that works pretty well. And that then allows you to spend more of your time on the business, growing it, again, honing and refining your systems, and doing what you do best, rather than being stuck in technician mode, which I still find many practitioners tend to be.
Oh, absolutely. And so let's say they've been able to do that. Let's say, just for the sake of argument, it's like they're at £250,000 in annual revenue or gross recurring fees. What does that then look like in terms of how much they're spending? Because I completely take your point around, you want those experienced staff members, not the new grads. And note, there's a whole different thing we could talk about around what does that experienced team member look like? And because experience is a big range, but I'm interested in the financial side of that, because one of the challenges I often see is that the business owner, you know, they'd love to have the experienced person then that can do some of that and can handle a client relationship and cope with those things. But then they think, well, you know, that's basically what I was doing on 50K or more. How am I going to afford that? Like, you know, particularly if they've only just got to 100K, that's basically all of their own income then has to go on this other person. So how have you seen that work well?
Yeah. So again, getting the positioning right is key, because if you can get to that point, like we do the capture, where average fees are like £10,000, then there is a lot of capacity for that person. That client manager earning 40 or 50 grand could probably handle about 20 to 25 mm-hmm. clients, which is a portfolio of, you know, 200 to 250K. So that's just one person pretty much could do that work, supported by maybe a junior. So again, it all boils down to that. And the firms that, and I know a firm that I've worked with, one of my mastermind members was in the video game space, specializing in video game developers. And again, the more you think, oh, is there a market in that? Absolutely. And to say, the more laser focused you go, the easier it is for you to get noticed, to actually, you know, become big fish in a small pond, and to pick up cream of the cream clients. And she'd scaled her practice to 600K with three or four part-time members of staff. So that has a huge bearing on in terms of average fees that you can charge, and therefore the resource that you need to be able to, you know, carry out and manage that the level of clients that you have. So it varies drastically in terms of what I see. So you could have a £500,000 practice that has 20 people, and you could have a £500,000 practice that has 10 people, and you could have a £500,000 practice that has 5 people, all with different, or clearly different, profit margins. In terms of the most, so if you look at my benchmark is in terms of our own practice, and this doesn't involve me doing any technical work whatsoever, is that I need to have a minimum of 100K of fees per full-time team member. So us getting to 1 million with 10 or so people.
Yeah.
I mean, that changed slightly because we've got a few offshore individuals. So mm-hmm. two offshore individuals count as one UK individual. But yeah, so that is my target, that 100K. And the most profitable firms can achieve that. 100K per team member, because that gives you, that's made up of approximately 30 to 40% of your staff costs, 10% of, say, software costs, etc., and overhead. 30 to 40% of direct costs being direct software costs plus staff costs, mm-hmm. and then 10% of overhead,
yep.
leaving a 50% net profit margin.
Okay.
So a 50% net profit margin is absolutely doable, and the most profitable firms can get there. 50% net profit margin.
Yeah, I love that clarity, because that is, it's interesting that that kind of 100,000 for every member of staff is an interesting kind of rule of thumb that I've actually experienced outside of accountancy practice in my own businesses as well, where it's like, yeah, broadly, I mean, it varies and so on, but it's like, it's not far off. And if you are far off, there's a, particularly if you're, you know, under that, then there's potentially a concern there and particularly opportunities for increasing profit. So I love that. And I think also, as you say, aiming for that 50% profit and then 30, 40% is your staffing and your software and then 10% overhead, that completely makes sense. And yet, when I've spoken to many owners of accountancy and bookkeeping practices, often the kind of percentages can be around that 20 to 30% range, which can make it very challenging, right? In terms of then being able to grow and add people into your practice while still getting paid yourself. So I like that you've, you know, you've taken us on that journey. You've been very clear that it does depend and it does vary and so on. And one of the things that's, of course, interesting in this is your revenue tends not to just jump like, oh, it's 100K now, it's 250K now, it's half a million, now it's a million. Unfortunately, because of course, you get to 50 people, 50 clients, for example, you then get to 51, 52. Now you're really stretched. Now you get to 55. Now you've maybe just got enough to give to another team member, but the costs is relatively high, and yet you're only using 25% of their bandwidth and so on. So I can see that that journey will have its ebbs and flows. And I think people have to appreciate that. But I think having that target of, I should be looking for 50% profit. Mm-hmm. So if I have to dip down because I'm investing in capacity that gets me back up to there, then that's fine. But I shouldn't be at a point where I'm going to have to hire again before starting to get back to that 50% mark. Because if that's the case, like if you're down at 20% and you're thinking, oh, well, it's okay, I've got a bit of capacity, but actually you're having to hire again when you get into 25%, then you're never going to get to that 50% point. So I think that's really useful. In terms of like your experience of people not hitting those numbers, one of the biggest ones we've talked about is around clarity on ideal customer, which is then related to both keeping your costs down and being able to keep your prices, I'll say inverse commas, like high. Really what we mean is focused on value and focused on outcome. What are the other reasons that you've seen practices not hitting those numbers?
I think those are the main reasons. The lack of positioning is huge, because, and most firms don't do that.
Yeah.
And they don't do it because they think that by niching down on one area, that they're closing the doors to others. It's this kind of fear mindset. But actually, when you do that, you suddenly you start to get noticed, you get known, and you attract better quality clients coming to you because you are now the go-to person in that space. You become known as the dental accountant or the optical accountant or the accountant for content creators or the property accountant. You get known in your space, and it's much easier. When you're clear on your who, the what, where, and how to find your ideal clients becomes so much easier. You're no longer a commodity. And this is the big difference, that when you're a generalist, you're a commodity. And what happens there is someone will come to you and say how much for a set of accounts, and you'll say one price, and they'll compare that with someone else, and they'll say, well, actually that accountant down there is cheaper, so I'm going to go with them. Why? Because if they can't differentiate you, then the only thing they have to differentiate you on is price. That's never a good thing. So you want to get known for something. You want to get known for being a specialist in a certain area, being able to add value to a certain type of client. And then you will attract that client who's willing to pay you more because you are the specialist, because they feel that you understand them better. You'll be able to deliver them a better quality of service on a deeper level than a generalist can. So yeah, that is a big message, which I think we need to repeat over and over
again,
because most accountants will, you know, they go, oh, I like the variety. But when you like the variety, then you can't say, I want to make high profit margins or I want to be able to scale, because it's going to be much tougher for you to scale when you are a generalist and you want to deal with everyone from doctors, dentists, architects, chiropractors, stamp dealers, property owners, SaaS businesses, it's a tall order to be able to do that as a small accountancy practice owner.
Yeah, agreed. And I think there's a couple of counters that I can see that I want to make sure we've fully punched a hole in. So one is, I can see some accountancy practice owners and business owners more generally, particularly professional services, that say, oh, well, no, I'm not sold on price. For me, it's all about the relationship. It's like they're buying the person and so on. But of course, it's like, but there you're creating a new problem called business is very dependent on you, because it's whatever the magic that you think you're bringing through that relationship development is. And also, to outposition you, all we have to do is get to a point where actually the customer says, well, actually, I'm not working with the business owner anymore that I had all that relationship with. I'm mainly working with their team. And if they don't seem to be particularly knowledgeable and I haven't got that same level of relationship, then it comes back to price or whatever, or the business owner has to wade back in to kind of rescue it. So I think firstly, I want to nail that one down. And then the second one, I really liked your point around, you know, these practice owners worry that they're closing the door on potential customers by saying, oh, I'm focusing on the niche. But I think the thing for people to remember is that actually, by opening the door to everyone, you're closing the door on the higher value focus. So it's like, for example, if this week I can have 10 calls with potential customers, and in theory, if I had focused on a particular segment, I could have 7 or 8 calls with that segment, but actually I'm going to throw it over open wide. Now I'm going to struggle to have those times available for them. And so, as you say, you continue to dilute, which reduces your conversion rate, reduces the price you can charge, increases the costs and so on. And so I think that's an important thing for people to remember, is you're not just closing the door to, you know, it's not like, oh, one is a closing the door exercise, the other one isn't. It's opportunity cost. That's what it comes down to, is it's what's the opportunity and where you're spending it. So yeah, I think you're right that is such an important message that it does bear repeating, and it's the thing that probably holds people back the most. I'm conscious that that works beautifully as a sort of key takeaway and so on for people. But if there was anything else that you'd want people to take away, or perhaps resources that you'd recommend that they utilize to kind of learn more and improve the profitability of their businesses, what would you suggest?
Okay, so I'll do a shameless plug of my book right now.
Oh, absolutely. Let's do that. Tell us about the work, Reza, because it is a great example of focus of segment and customer avatar. So for those that aren't in Reza's market, this is a lesson in segmentation. For those that are, get the book. So go on, Reza, tell us about the book.
So the book is called The Four Pillars, and it's how to build an accounting firm that gives you more money, time, and freedom. So definitely, for an accounting firm owner, then it's what you need. It's what I've learned the hard way over the last 15 years of making all the mistakes under the sun to get my profit, to get my firm to run highly profitably without me. And it's, there's a lot of what I've kind of covered in a nutshell today. You go deep into those, and if you implement even some of what you read, no doubt you'll get results. But it's not just, I mean, there are many non-accountants that have bought it, and certainly the first half of the book is all dedicated to pricing. So if you're in an industry where you're charging by the hour, you're a lawyer, you're in financial services, you do some kind of consulting work, then that section will definitely be useful to you as well. And other sections on, you know, how to attract the best talent, how to retain your high performers, how to maximize everyone's potential in terms of getting the best out of people as well, without resorting to doing timesheets and things like that the old school way. There's a lot in that which could be useful, again, applicable not just to accountants, but to other business owners in other industries as well. So that's, if you want a copy, you can get it on Amazon, or on my, if you go to my profile on LinkedIn, there is a link to get a free copy from there just by shipping and handling. So make the most of it while stocks last, as it were.
Fantastic. Yeah, I highly recommend people do that. If you own an accountancy practice business, obviously get it. If you don't, it sounds like you should get it because it's free and you can just pay for shipping. You can read it, get the value for you, then give it as a present to your accountant who, you know, that. Just make sure that then when they start changing their prices, you can say, yeah, but you won't do that to me because I'm the one that helped you achieve this. And they'll have to go, oh, okay. Marvelous. Well, that's fantastic. Thank you so much for joining me, Reza. It's been absolute pleasure having you on the show. I'll make sure that we've got links to Reza's website in the show notes and his social handles and all that kind of stuff, and also his book, and also your podcast, Reza, as well, the Profitable Accountant podcast as well. So we'll make sure we link to all of those in the show notes. But otherwise, Reza, thank you very much for joining me. You've been absolutely awesome.
Thank you, Alex. This has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Oh, fantastic. No, I've really, really enjoyed it. And then to our audience, like, if you own a bookkeeping or accounting practice like Reza, then I've got a free webinar coming up that I think you're going to love. So I've been asked to speak at some upcoming sort of events for accountancy and bookkeeping practice owners. So I've put together this keynote presentation called Hunting Unicorns, How to Get Affordable Talent into Your Accountancy Practice, which indeed was one of the two biggest challenges that Reza talked about earlier. One being making sure that you're getting clients, decent revenue. I'm going to be talking about the talent side. Now, to help me prepare for that, I figure I'm going to do a webinar version to my lovely audience through De-Stress Your Business, at a bit of a debut, a bit of a practice for me before I'm going and doing it on stages. And the reason for this particular topic is I know from my research that 72% of accountancy practices have grown in the last 12 months. Most are grappling with this challenge of growth and acquiring talent. However, you know, finding that right talent at the right cost, as we've talked about in this episode, can sometimes feel more like hunting unicorns than conducting the business. And yet the future of the practice depends on doing just that. So I've been working with lots of awesome people like Reza and accountancy and bookkeeping practice owners to learn what are their goals, the obstacles and the best practices that are working. I've put that together in this presentation, and so I'll be delivering that in this session. So join me to learn about the complexities of talent acquisition in the accountancy sector and get some really actionable strategies for building a team of A players and getting amazing results at a lower cost than your competition. You can find out more and secure your place at airmanual.link/huntingunicorns. That's airmanual.link/huntingunicorns. I should stress at this point, no unicorns were harmed in the making of this presentation. The name is there mainly for grabbing attention. Anyway, thank you again, Reza, for joining me, and to everyone else for joining us on this episode. If you found the content today valuable, please just take a minute to leave a review on your favorite podcast platform or share the episode on social media and tag Reza and I in. We'd really appreciate it. It genuinely makes a big difference. But otherwise, until next time, have fun.